I'm not pulling on my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another Drive to Work, coronavirus edition. Okay, guys, I've been lining up lots of fun interviews, and the fun continues today with Adam Prozak. So, Adam, welcome.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so, Adam, we're going to start by asking the question I've been asking everybody, which is, how did you get into magic?
Yeah, so I actually have an awesome intro story. So, during my my grandparents' 50th wedding anniversary, my cousins and I were just, like, bored with the, like, festivities or whatever, and one of my cousins was like, hey, I got this new game I want you to try. And so I actually have the – and there are all sorts of pictures taken at this event, and one of these pictures is, like, me and five of my cousins sitting around in a circle playing a game of magic, and it was our first game of magic. It was crazy. Like, each one of us had, like, a different – picked a different color at random, basically. I think I got stuck with red. I don't know. But, like, that's how we thought we played magic for a long time. And then my early magic playing was just with that same group of my – me and, you know, four of my family members just sitting around in a circle. And we thought magic had to be played with five players. So that was a lot of my introduction to magic. The green deck was so strong, because they had all the big creatures.
So when was this? What set was this?
So hard for me to say. I think most of them were with. I had a lot of revised and fourth edition cards.
Okay.
But a lot of my early magic playing. Like, when I started to get cards of my own, ended up being, like, Ice Age and Homelands.
Okay,
I remember having a lot of fond memories of, like, those early Homelands cards.
So many, many, many years ago.
Oh, yeah. I've been playing Magic for almost two-thirds of my life now.
It's funny. Star Magic is how you got introduced to Magic. That's quite funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so... let's walk. So you started playing Magic. So how did you transition from playing Magic kind of fun with your family members to playing more competitively? How did that happen?
Yeah, so before I started at Wizards, I was heavily involved in tournament play. I played all sorts of different sanctioned Magic from, you know, I still love playing FNM when, you know, we're allowed to. And, but yeah, I basically, when I went away to college... I was on an internet relay chat where somebody that was based around Magic, because this is a game I like, and somebody from the area, I went to school in Cincinnati, Ohio, somebody from the area is like, hey, I'm looking for somebody to go to Magic tournaments with, you know, anybody from the area, and then we became fast friends, and that's how we kind of started. I hadn't really played in too many Magic tournaments before then, I spent a lot of my early years playing Magic, not even knowing that Magic tournaments existed. Seeing this like thing as a competitive outlet, because I'm a pretty competitive person, and seeing Magic as like that competitive outlet, something I can focus at, you know, work at, get better at, and it was just like the best thing. At that time for me. So I loved the early exploration of Magic tournaments.
So what was your best finish? What was your best finish?
So I probably played in around six Pro Tours, maybe, yeah. And then I had, so every once in a while I qualified for a handful more. Probably like my best finishes were at the Star City Games Invitationals. Mm-hmm. I made the top eight of three of them, which I'm very happy with, and I won two of the Opens as well. So a lot of my best tournament success came like kind of later in my career, because like when I started playing tournament Magic, like there wasn't anything like that. It was just Pro Tour qualifiers and the Pro Tour and Grand Prix.
Okay, so how did you go from, you know, playing Magic sort of competitively to get into Wizards? What was the transition to Wizards?
Yeah, so over over the course of my playing career, I met a lot of people in the community. A lot of those people ended up working at Wizards. One of those people was my first manager, Dave Humphreys. I actually played another card game where Dave worked at, and I was one of the best players in that. So we had some sort of he knew who I was when my name came up for coming to work at Wizards. And then also at the time, I had done a variety of writing, streaming in the early days of Twitch, doing some commentary. So I was well known in a lot of my articles and content was about kind of magic theory and how magic works, instead of just like decklist after decklist or how to solve this particular environment, but thinking about magic as a whole.
Yeah, I should real quickly, I just want to say something to people out there who are like have dreams of one day working at Wizards. What you did, writing articles where you demonstrate that you understand the game, the competitive articles or the decklist articles, I mean, there's lots of readers for those. Those are great. But the thing we always kind of look at is, does this person understand the fundamentals of what's going on? And so articles that really show us that you get it, you understand how it works, are from an R&D standpoint, are the ones we're most interested in as far as looking for new candidates. Because it's important to us we can find people that get it. I mean, Magic is a very complex game, lots of moving parts. And one of the things we always look for when looking for external people, for new people, is do they get the fundamentals? Because there's a lot to learn. And so you walking in the door knowing a decent amount of it helps a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I just think like Magic has a lot of theory behind it, especially if competitive theory, like what are the strongest things, has like certain types of cards end up being have like natural advantages in terms of how strong they are. Like one of the things I kind of harp on in a lot of my design meetings is like, well, we have to be really careful with the cards that don't cost a lot of mana. They're so like, I often say like 4 mana is way more than twice as much as 2 mana.
Mm-hmm.
Just that's like an example of how like the mana system in Magic works, in ways that might not be obvious to a lot of players.
So when you were first brought in, mm-hmm. So what year did you join Wizards?
Next month, mm-hmm. or September, is going to be my 7-year anniversary. So 7 years ago.
Okay, 2013?
I started right before the Theros pre-release.
Okay, so when you were first brought in, one of the things that I know you were known for when we brought you in originally was you were a really good deck builder.
Mm-hmm.
And that one of the challenges in Magic is we're making brand new cards all the time, and we want to figure out like what's going to cause problems, right? Because we're trying to balance things. And you were originally brought in. What was it? Development at the time?
Yes. Yeah. Back when we had development before play design.
And so I know that one of the reasons we brought you in originally was that having the ability to look at new things and break them down quickly is really valuable when we're trying to figure out like what might cause us problems.
Yeah, one of the things I still find very jarring is like you sit down, you build a deck, you play like a game, maybe a game and a half, and you're just like, okay, throw this deck in the trash. There's something, either it's like not fun, things aren't right, it's too strong, it's not strong enough. Like, the amount I will play after building a deck is just so small when the cards can change rapidly. Whereas, like, if I sit down and build a deck for, like, Magic Arena, I'll play dozens and dozens of games with that deck because I just, like, find something I enjoy and play it a lot. So it's really jarring, like, the difference between, like, working, deck building while working, and then deck building while, playing and having fun.
Yeah, the thing that the audience, it's interesting, is that to the audience, it's static, right? Cards are cards. If they exist, that is what they are.
Well, that's the reality, right?
Yeah. But behind the scenes, like, right, one of the hard parts about working on the game is nothing is permanent. You know, like, everything can change. And so, right, like, you build a deck and all of a sudden it's too strong. Well, cards in it will change, and then now the deck doesn't work necessarily or not the same.
Right. Yeah. A lot of times, like, I build a deck, put it, you know, play a card, and it's like, okay, this doesn't do anything. Let's, you know, I'm going to go. I'll even, like, pull a card out of a deck and just put it on my desk as a note. Just, like, I don't need to this card for anything else, but I do need the notes.
Okay, so you started doing development. So I want to get a little bit, one of the things that I like talking about with people is stuff they led, just because it's interesting to get it, like, obviously the way it works at Wizards is you're on a bunch of teams and then you work your way up. And so there was a lot of things along the way, and you've been there for 7 years, so you've been on lots and lots of teams. But I want to focus a little bit on stuff that you were more in charge of, just because it's interesting. I like hearing all the decision making and hearing stuff you're in charge of usually gets us the best insight there. So the first thing that I have you leading here, or major thing you're leading, was Eternal Masters. Is that correct?
Yeah. So kind of when I started, I kind of, in addition to the deck building thing, you know, you noted, like, one of my strengths is that, like, I know a lot of Magic cards. Like, some people are, you know, really just like trivia buffs, like good at Magic trivia, or like know all the cards, know all the thing. And that's absolutely one of my strengths. So when it comes to reprint products like the Master sets, I was a good person to go to. So like giving me kind of, I won't say they're easier, because they're not easier, but they're like more restrictive. There's fewer possibilities with reprint stuff. So I thought that those were good sets for me to lead.
Just to start with, as a way to get your, like, one of the things behind the scenes real quickly is, we have lots of people, and what we want to do is make a trajectory so that the people can learn and get better and train and stuff. And so Magic makes a lot of products. And so one of the things really important is, like, the very first thing you lead is not the hardest thing in the world to do. It's something that has some parameters on it. For example, on my end, if you're leading Vision, I have you lead a return, usually before I have you lead a new set. Because a new world has a lot more issues to solve than a world we're going back to, because we've already solved some of those issues because we were there before.
Yeah, and it's not just that, but, like, give people something they'd be good at to start. So make sure, like, for example, it would not make a lot of sense for, like, me to lead a Vision set while you lead the Master sets. That's not a good use of our respective skill sets.
That is very true.
But Master sets are within my skill set, so that was a very good, like, this is something, you know, I'm naturally good at doing. So, yeah, one of the reasons that Master sets are really interesting, because, like, sometimes the thing about Master sets is, like, sometimes there's a card you almost want to use. It just has, like, just this little weird old rule, like, templating quirk from, you know, sometime in Magic's history. Like, a lot of times where, like, old cards are symmetrical, they affect all players.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't work for, like, the limited environment. Just, like, it's like, oh, no, like, I would love to just make a new card and do that, but you can't do that with a Master set. So it all often ends up being really, really challenging.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that is important for people to understand is, just like we're in any new set we build with new cards, you still have all the same things you're trying to do. You're trying to build a limited environment. You're trying to build archetypes. Right. Like, you're trying to build something. So you just have, like, less paint colors to use than something, you know.
Right. It's like, instead of just, like, a broad, you know, canvas, which you can do whatever you want, you get a lot of numbers, but you still have to paint by numbers.
Yeah.
So it's a lot, it's very restrictive, and sometimes that's, like, easy is like, oh, that's the best I can do. Or sometimes it's really frustrating, because, like, I really, really need this, but it doesn't exist. It's like, hey, time machine, can we go back and print this, you know, random 3-drop with this creature type that does, you know, like,
So So Eternal Masters, what was the theme of Eternal Masters? Do you remember?
So, yeah, Eternal Masters was one of the earlier Master sets. I think it was the third Master set. So Modern Masters, the original one, mm-hmm. and then Modern Masters 2015, and then Eternal Masters. And that was the first one that had cards that weren't Modern Legal in it. So it had Legacy and Vintage cards. So, like, Force of Will and Wasteland were the, like, kind of the headline cards at the time. And it was super exciting to, you know, finally reprint those cards after 15 years or whatever it was. So that was the theme. And then there's, yeah, just kind of limited themes throughout the set. Yeah, like my favorite was like green and white enchantments is really cool. I had to go deep and find all these like weird green enchantments that kind of aren't color-fi appropriate, but exist.
Okay, so you did Eternal Masters, and then the next big thing you did was Modern Masters 2017.
Yeah, so that was the theme of that one was it was a multicolor thing, because at the time, master sets were based on kind of blocks that were introduced, and one of the big blocks that we had access to for the first time for that was Return to Ravnica. So it was like, oh, let's make this a multicolor set. And for those, magic historians, that was about the time when, the internet thought we would never reprint Damnation. So made sure that Damnation was in that one too.
Something you brought up that I don't know the audience is aware of. When we make master sets, usually there's some sort of gap between when the sets come out and they show up in a master, because we want to go back and get sort of older stuff and bring back older stuff. And so what you're saying is sometimes you're making a master, like, oh, this set's now available and now you have access where before we wouldn't have put it in a master set. And that,
right. Yeah, a lot of time we wanted to kind of like each master set had a few more sets that, like, either they hadn't come out in the real world, or we want them to like rotate out of standard before we put them in a master set. Now our master sets are mostly kind of themes. Like the recent Double Masters has an artifact theme. Mm-hmm. Back with Modern Master 17, it wasn't necessarily based on a like overarching theme like most of our main sets are. But like mostly based on what we want to put in the set, like what sets we want to draw from.
So before we move off Masters, what is the thing that people most misunderstand about Masters? Like what is the thing that's as a guy who makes lots of Master sets? What is the thing you don't think people know about it?
The different, like, how difficult it is to fit the right themes, like, at least making the master sets, actually, I find very challenging. Like, kind of what I explained about the, like, oh, there's not always the card you want to make. Sometimes it's really, really skewed. Like, one of my big regrets about Masters 2017 was that there weren't enough Dimir cards that were good candidates. So I ended up using one that I very much regret, just because the options weren't that great. Like, I regret putting Dinrova Horror in the set. That was really unbalancing. But, like, the other options were not... They're much, much weaker and didn't do that much. So sometimes you just have to stretch, and sometimes that backfires.
Okay, so now let's transition away from sets without new cards. So the next set we're going to talk about is a combination. It had some reprints, but it had a lot of new cards. Modern Horizons.
Yeah. Horizons is so fascinating. To this day, it remains my favorite project. Not just because of, like, the final product, which I absolutely love. But I also just love the journey that we went on, like, just as, like, a whole, even a whole company, like, just, like, what it started at and what it, morph into over time, how we had to go through each of the different, like, okay, what is this, like, what are we doing, like, what are we allowing ourselves to do, what's the goal here, I know you had a lot of, you had a lot of work involved in, like, kind of the genesis of it, like, you did a, like, we call them hackathons.
Yeah, yeah, the, basically the story is, Ethan and I each individually went in and pitched, it was similar enough that, Mark Lobus, who was in charge at the time, said, why don't you guys just put this together? You seem to basically want the same thing.
Right, right.
And so, yeah, we had a week to sort of, prove ourselves, and then we got picked. And then a year later it came out, so.
Yeah. And then not only did, like, the thing that kind of, like, got picked, was very different from what we ended up, but, like, the spiritual, like the idea is the same, but, like, oh, are we gonna, like, what are we gonna do with these reprints? Like, what kind of, stuff do we want? Like, how are we going to position this? You know, like, when are we gonna release it?
Well, our original pitch didn't involve modern at all. We were just like, let's do another Time Spiral. You know, let's do another nostalgia-driven, and franchise player, but a supplemental set rather than a main, and a premiere set. And then it sort of took on this, once it became modern, like, it took on this whole other life once that aspect.
I still remember the moment that was there, like, Bill Rose, one of our vice presidents, was like, oh, hey, like, you know, like, what kind of audience would like this? And then eventually came around, like, well, people that really like modern would like this. It's like, okay, well. And then, just like the kind of, I don't know, the whole, like, then from that to that, and then, like, the whole product kind of, like, picked up a lot of steam as we kept working on it. Like, the more we were able to, like, internally, the more we were able to spread the word around, like, hey, come check out this product, the more people got excited about it, just internally. And that's how we knew it was going to be, like, a really big hit.
Yeah, it is funny to watch it from, like, skeptical early beginnings to, like, everyone was so excited. Like,
yeah. Like, a lot of things, like, will people even want this? And then as we made it, the answer was just so clearly, like, yeah. I kind of want this.
Okay, so I'm not too far from getting to work here. So I want to get on to your entry into making a premiere set. So the first time, Core 2021 was your baby. So let's talk about, what was that like, making Core 2021?
Yeah, so the big difference between Modern Horizons and Core 2021 was kind of having to fully integrate with the play design team at the end of the process. So for all of, our other sets, there's still a set design team, like product reviews, you still interact. There's still, creative, art directors and card conceptors that you work with. But the big difference between a standard legal set is the presence of the play design team, and specifically the grind that is getting your set through the FFL process. That's a ton of work. We have a ton of talented people on play design.
Can you explain FFL real quickly? Can you explain FFL?
Oh, yes. So FFL is our internal like play test. It's called Future League. That doesn't really mean too much to us. FFL is our internal playtesting process for standard legal sets.
So that you can play ahead, so that you guys are playing the environment of the future, so that we can make changes based on what we learn about that environment.
Right, and we try and use a little combination of stuff that's already been released and stuff that's new, so we can kind of see how the new stuff interacts with the old stuff that we have some good data on. But sometimes that, yeah, like I think when we were working on M21, Throne of Eldraine was just released. So we got the whole, like, the whole Ravnica year plus Throne of Eldraine, but we didn't have any information on, like, Theros or Ikoria. So we had some stuff that was new and we were playtesting, and some stuff that had already been released.
Okay, so I want to ask you about a few things in Core 2021. Okay, so the thing that I got the most positive buzz on was the dog theme. So how did the dog theme come about?
Yeah, so I love, and I'm like my favorite magic stuff is just like the whimsical stuff. I like all the like meme cards. I like making jokes about cards. I love giving nicknames to cards. And so, to the point, like, I just started calling anything that's, like, a hound or anything, like, a good doggo. I love dogs. I have, you know, my Shih Tzu is, you know, my favorite. So I love dogs. And, like, yeah, we just kind of got around talking. And it's, like, we were kind of lamenting. It's, like, why don't we have... Why do we still have these hounds and not these dogs? Dogs are way cooler. And then I was talking with like a bunch of people that like could actually change this stuff. It's like, okay, I want to change this. What do I have to do? And then go around talking to people. It's like, okay, nobody has an objection. It's like, well, why did we do this so much earlier? I know you had some frustration at various points, but like, I guess with the people we have that, you know, the kind of, you know, the way magic is going a little bit more lighthearted than it has historically. I think it's just an easy change.
It's funny that the behind the scenes is I spent years trying to make this change. I mean 15 years. And then I finally got resigned to like, I guess it's never going to change. And then you like completely unaware just get it changed. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So, but happy. Yeah. I'm happy to see it happen.
Yeah, me too. And that part of it was, and then the other interesting thing about working on Core 2021 is Jumpstart. So we had to figure out like how these two products, how much they're intertwined. We decided that they wanted to use a lot of themes that overlapped in the sets. Like their planeswalker themes for each of the five planeswalkers, their themes for each of like the limited archetypes that overlap. Jumpstart uses a lot of Core 2021, but like at some point it's its own product. It's different. We decided that it needed the flexibility to do what it wanted. Couldn't be, that tied at the hip with the main set. And I think Jumpstart is super cool.
Yeah, so...
Jumpstart ended up amazing.
Some of the audience doesn't know, there was a point in time where Core 2021 and Jumpstart were, like, kind of the same thing. Like, it started on the... And then they sort of drifted apart a little bit as they realized that they could overlap, but they were kind of separate products. But there was definitely a point in time where... Core 2021 is penciled as, because Doug had been trying to do Jumpstart forever, and like, okay, this is going to be the place we do it. We're gonna incorporate it into the core set. And then I know they got extracted over time. They ended up being not the same thing.
But yeah, so the lead of Jumpstart, Doug Beyer, and I worked a ton early on in the process, just like, how are we aligning things? How are we, you know, how are we going to set both of these things up for success? And even super early on, it was pitched that, like, oh, maybe I am in charge of both products. Maybe they're that close together that I can do both of them. But that was quickly, by the time we started design, that was not the case. and Doug was an awesome person. He had worked so much on the initial kind of thing that ended the initial design that became Jumpstart.
Did Yanni did sub design?
Doug.
Oh, Doug did sub. No, I mean Did Doug do the set design as well as the vision? Yes. Oh, he did. He did. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Yanni was on the team and did a lot of the game balance.
Okay. Okay.
Stuff for it. But yeah, Doug was the lead on Jumpstart. And yeah, Doug's great because he's his main job is as a creative person, a card conceptor. But he's so talented that he's got some game to, you know, he's led a couple of products as well.
And Jumpstart was his baby. Jumpstart was his idea.
Yep, absolutely.
It's interesting that he was in the same hackathon. The same hackathon that we did Modern Horizons is when we did that.
Yep, but I remember playing both of them.
because of printing issues, it ended up taking longer. Like, what the audience doesn't always realize is we had to invent new printing processes to be able to even make Jumpstart. And it was, behind the scenes, it's a very complex product from a production standpoint. And I'm not sure the audience on the end necessarily understands that, but it took us a lot longer to figure out how to make it on, like, just, I don't mean design it. I mean physically print the product.
Yeah, right. And a lot of times that kind of stuff is challenging and sometimes frustrating as game designers. It's like, we want to do so many things, but, you know, we're limited by, like, you know, our cards have to be, like, we have pieces of cardboard that have to be physically made.
Yeah, or collation. There's all sorts of things we have to work under. So anyway, I am almost at my desk. So, anything you want to sum up? Anything that's sort of your time at Wizards that you want to hit upon that we haven't yet?
No, working at Wizards is still 7 years in, still my dream job. I love coming into my other room to work every day. and I can't wait to, I really miss going back in the office and seeing everybody. But yeah, working at Wizards is literally a dream come true, and even after all these years. And yeah.
Well, thank you, Adam. So guys, looks like I'm at my desk. So we all know what that means. It means this is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. So Adam, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
And guys, I will see all of you next time. Bye-bye.